How's everybody doing this afternoon? Okay, everybody survived their Friday night activities? Everybody still alive? Who was expecting to see Questlove here? We apologize in advance. He was ill. But no, we actually changed the panel to social media for Minority Mindshare, and it's really a dynamic panel that we have today to talk about how emerging artists, and this is really, you know, kind of transcends a conversation about diversity, but emerging artists, period, can leverage social media tools to gain market share and get access to clients, customers, sponsors, and critics. So I'll start off by just letting you know who I am, since I will be your Oprah today. So everybody, please, you know, engage us here. My name is Natalie Cofield. I'm the president and CEO for the Capital City African American Chamber of Commerce here in Austin, Texas. So Austin, as you all know, many of you all are probably coming from various locations throughout the country and probably around the world. Austin is one of the hippest, youngest cities in the country. We have an average age of 32. And the national average is 37. We have major institutional staples such as South By, ACL, things of that nature. And so we're constantly looking for talent to be here. We're also considered the live music capital of the United States. And so there's really a strong emphasis from this region to encourage artists and creatives to leverage business skills and social media tools to come to Austin, stay in Austin, and participate in some of Austin's staples. So thank you all for coming today, and I'm going to do some really brief introductions of our panelists, just kind of give you their name and the organizations that they're affiliated with, and then we'll get the panel started by talking a little bit about their background. So if I start from, I guess, what is this, my right? If I start from my right, we have Ron Harrison, who is the co-founder of Blaze Track, LLC, which is based out of New York City. He's a former NFL athlete, had his own financial advising company, and has worked extensively with Rich Craft, which is a company that is also affiliated with Rich Harrison, who is the Grammy Award-winning artist for things such as Crazy in Love for Beyonce. And so Blaze Track is a platform that helps emerging artists, artists, creatives, and individuals get closer access to industry leaders and executives. So thank you for coming, Ron. Next, we have Corey Coleman, who has worked extensively in the areas of animation, film, critiquing, and is currently working right now with Spill.com. He's a local Austinite, so we'd like to welcome him. Thank you for coming, Corey. And last but not least, we have Mazi Kazaruni, who is a co-founder for TrackSpy. He is also responsible for helping Lil Wayne get to the 30 million mark for the Guinness World Record, most Facebook fans and likes, and really kind of finessed that experience into his own company, started working with the founding team of Ustream, and has really been regarded as a prodigy in this space, and was recently recognized by Forbes. So join me in welcoming the panel that we have here today. All right, so we're going to get started and really kind of lay a foundation for the art of the start, okay? Because a lot of people want to know how people, such as our panelists, even came into their current professions and careers. And I call it the early hustle. So what was it that you first did? What was your first kind of real career exposure that helped you to get into your current field? And tell us a little bit about that experience. So if we'll start with whomever would like, but go ahead, take it.
So I'll start. It really started with two different experiences for me. First, working with my brother and seeing his grind, trying to get into the music industry and, you know, the difficulty that he had. And then also once he made it into the industry and everyone was trying to get to him, I saw that, you know, there was a need for this type of platform that we decided to create. Also, my co-founder, Corey Stanford, used to work for a very small independent record label in Atlanta. And he used to just get inundated with demos and people wanting him to listen to music, so much so that the post office would complain about delivering so much stuff, you know, to their office, and he had to come and pick it up. So he decided to charge a fee, hoping that it would curb some of the submissions that came in. And the complete opposite happened. He actually got more submissions when he put that fee in the middle of it. So I guess it was perceived that there was going to be a value to paying a fee and having some sort of feedback together. So we kind of put those two ideas together and said, well, hey, if people are willing to send things to a small independent label with no major artists, no major records or anything, what if we created a platform that allows them to reach highly successful individuals in that same category? And that's kind of how Blaze Track was birthed.
Yeah, I guess you could say I'm one of those people who accidentally fell into what we did. I started doing what I did kind of as a scam, because I used to watch free movies all the time. Well, I used to watch movies all the time, and I worked with a guy who would go with me all the time to see these movies, and we got tired of paying for them. So we said we should do a cable access show. If nobody knows what cable access is, cable access is where you go down to a locally funded TV station, and you can sign up for a license, take a class, and you can make your own show. And that's what we did. And we did that just so we could qualify as quote-unquote press and get free movie passes. And we were going to do that for about half a year or so and stop, but people actually watched the show, and I ended up doing it for 10 years. And after 10 years, I said, well, you know, this is fun, but it is a hobby, and we're not getting paid for it, and I don't want to be 50 years old still doing access television. So we stopped doing it, but I had 10 years of material behind me. And at that time, I was doing animation primarily as my career. And so I thought it might just be fun to take some of the audio that we had from our reviews and animate them. And again, doing that just for fun. We put that on YouTube, and then a company in New York saw it and said, well, this is kind of cool. We would like to hire you to develop this idea for it. So they kind of bought us out, and that's how we got Spill.com today. We've been sold to another company called Hollywood.com since then, which is more of an entertainment company, but that's pretty much the roots of it, just playing around and accidentally falling into something you're just having a good time with.
So last year, I started a company called TracksBuy with my friend Matt Schlicht. Back in 2007, we met in high school, and we discovered Ustream. And the first time I saw Ustream, I was like, this platform is ridiculous. Like, I've never seen something so engaging before. And we started trying to think, like, what's something cool that we could do on this website? We came up with this concept for a game show called Would You 72, where we had a guy attempt to play Halo 3 for 3 days straight live on Ustream. And, yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. We leveraged some message boards that we were members of and dig.com to get the word out that we were streaming this, and ended up getting about 100,000 viewers over the 3-day period. That was the biggest event that Ustream had ever had up until that point, and it made the co-founder, now CEO of Ustream, Brad Huntsable, reach out to us, and we ended up being his first hires. That led to me doing VIP support at Ustream for about 4 years. It led Matt leading product at Ustream for 4 years. And we left last June to start our own company.
So before we move into the next question, because Mazi, you answered a little bit with your kind of user base, how many people either do you have affiliated with your organization, Ron in your case, the artists and experts that you're working with, and Corey for you, how many people kind of are you guys touching?
Oh, well, our page views right now are about 6.5, 7 million a month, you know, which is cool for what we have, because the way I look at our site, it is not really a fully developed site yet. It's actually pretty broken, and it's because we're a property that a lot of people don't really know what to do with yet. I mean, we combine so many things that just don't seem to fit together that it's been hard for over the years for people to figure out how to market us. But we've been fortunate in that we've just built up, I guess what you could say, a cult following. I mean, the VP of the company that I work with, Hollywood.com, was actually kind of disturbed by this, because we went to, he said, you have people that look like they would take a bullet for you and put a bullet in you at any moment. They, because we had a meeting in Boston, and I just put out a tweet saying that we're going to be in Boston, and sent out like an email saying I'm in Boston for a few hours. If somebody wants to come and hang out, then let's do so. And I was leaving the meeting that we had that day. I said, I got to go meet some people. And they were like, well, how many people are coming out? I was like, it looks like about 20 people showed up or something. He's like, all that from a tweet or an email? I was like, yeah. And he's like, I think that's really cool, but I think you're going to die one day, you know, because you're just going out and meeting all these strangers. But that's as of right now, what they're going through, we're owned by a parent site, and their site is going through a major development right now. And so once that's developed, they'll get to our site and develop that. But during the meantime, the thing that's been maintaining us is just having a strong user base that's coming there every day to see what we have. And I'm pretty amazed by that myself. I hope I do live another year to do this. So.
How many artists do you all work with through BlazeTrack, and who are some of your key artists?
Well, currently we have about 400 clients. You know, we've been in beta for the past 18 months, so we're actually going to be coming out of beta probably next month. And we have a very small user base, about 30,000 registered users, but they're all paying customers, so, you know, we're happy about that. And some of the clients that we have are Roddy Jerkins, who's a Grammy Award-winning songwriter and producer, Matthew Knowles, of course, is Beyonce's father, LaShawn Daniels, songwriter, Makeba Riddick, another songwriter, Amber Rose is on the site doing video autographs. So there's a mix of a lot of different professionals, music, as well as celebrities that just want to have an opportunity to reach out to their fans.
And Mozzie, we know that you've worked with Lil Wayne, but who are some of your current clients?
So at TracksBy, we've created a platform to help artists launch new content. We've been in private beta. Right now, we have about 100 artists with a combined like 180 million fans on Facebook. People like Lil Wayne, Drake, Trey Songz, Pitbull, Far East Movement, Soulja Boy. We're actually going to be opening up the platform, I think, later today or tomorrow. So if there's anybody who wants to check it out or get an artist on it, talk to me after the panel.
Okay. So the next question is kind of really about what's in your toolkit. So we've heard a little bit about, you know, how people got their start, where they are today, but I would love to hear a little bit about some of the experiences that they've had that have really shaped them from a endurance perspective. Because if anybody is an entrepreneur, you know that there are trials and tribulations, there are peaks and valleys, and you really have to kind of go through something. So I'd love for the panelists to talk to me about a skill set that you gained through something that you've gone through with your business.
I would probably say more management skills than I've ever even wanted, because it's, I mean, I know that sounds kind of harsh, but it's not. It's actually been very valuable. I mean, I came into this as an animator, and that's pretty much all I wanted to do. And then I put myself out there in some of these reviews just because it was easy to do. I'm there. I'm available all the time. Why not put myself in my own content? And I do it with some other people now. But at that time, I was doing it by myself, and I was doing it with friends. And as we begin to progress, our animation got so much more advanced that I had to hire animators. So now I have a team of 6 animators. And now I'm also general manager of the site. So I was just telling a fellow back there that, you know, I have to keep up with our analytics now. I have to do payroll. I have to do, even though we're owned by a company that funds us and manages us and they, for whatever purposes they need to, keeps a tab on us, they're pretty hands off. And because of that, it's almost like I do feel like I'm running my own business, and that's been fine. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you, I had no management skills before. I was an artist, and that was it. And now that I've had to do all this, I get a sense what that entrepreneurial spirit is like, and you know, it makes me appreciate it more, and it makes me feel like if I someday got this taken away from me, or I couldn't do it anymore, I could probably easily do something else.
So at Ustream, I learned that the customer is probably the most important thing in the world. I fell into a role of VIP support there because celebrities started signing up, like little artists, little athletes would sign up, and they'd want, you know, I'd get a call at 2 a.m. saying, Floyd Mayweather wants to go live, he needs help right now to get it going. And if I wasn't there to answer that call and make that happen, we'd lose out on that content. I see a lot of people that take even paying clients for granted sometimes, and it's mind-boggling to me. Without them, you're nothing. Like, if you're an artist, your fans are the most important thing in your life. Like, it doesn't matter what critics think. It doesn't matter what, like, any record label thinks. If you have fans that love what you're doing, you just need to focus on them.
I would say for me, it's just networking and managing relationships. I mean, both of my co-founders are married. So, you know, I'm the one that they send out to the parties and send out to L.A. And
poor him.
It's so hard, man.
You know, I mean, hey, you know, the job calls for it. Their wives aren't having it. So, and it's difficult to deal with celebrities and creative people. So you have to be able to massage those relationships. You have to know when to call them, when to leave them alone, how to contact them. And, you know, just working with them and making sure that they're on top of things and getting their marketing straight and all these things. Because, I mean, it's difficult when you deal with the creative mind. I mean, you know, when they're creating, when they're making music, you know, they're focused on that. Anything else just completely falls by the wayside. So you have to constantly massage that relationship in order to just to keep them in track with the things that they want to do.
It's a really delicate process.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, one of the things that I think is kind of coming out of all of these comments is the space around creatives and business, right? And really gaining that business acumen and improving your business skills. And I want us to talk about that in a minute. But one of the other things that I want us to kind of get to is, how are you all using social media right now to engage with these people? And how would someone use social media right now to engage with them or you?
I know everybody uses, they say you got to Twitter, you got to use Facebook. I mean, those things you have to use. And we do. But it's funny because we're sort of a social media site ourselves. I mean, we're not exactly that. I consider ourselves to be an entertainment site. But we've built up our own community that for whatever purposes that we need something, we use Twitter, we use Facebook, but our biggest tool is also our own website. I mean, because people, our members, our core audience checks that every day, and that's probably the first place. Like, if you get into like our hardcore users, that's the first place they're going to go before they go to Facebook or they go to Twitter. So we use all three of those things. The benefit of what we have today, whether it be Twitter or Facebook, or website or anything, is that you have so much more access to the people that support you than you ever had before. I mean, it sometimes it's great, sometimes it can be scary. I mean, you see actors today who would never, ever talk to their fans. They would have people keep them at arm's reach. You see them going online now to defend themselves against fans when they have something to say. Hey, man, what'd you say? You know, they're like, they don't even know this person. Like, who you talking to? You know, but it's, and that's kind of where we fall into. I think that we've done that exceptionally well in that we make ourselves accessible, probably too accessible to our fans, our members, our supporters, or whoever we have out there. And that's been our biggest business asset right now.
Okay. Anyone else?
Raise your hands if you've heard of Instagram. Everybody here know Instagram? Okay. So there's this new app that I've fallen in love with called SocialCam. It's like Instagram for video. I've had a few of my artists start to use it. I've gotten Lil Twist, who's a Young Money artist, on there. And after just like 2 months, he's gotten more followers on SocialCam than he has on Instagram because video is really, really engaging. It makes it really like dead simple to make a beautiful video with your phone and get it on the internet in less than 30 seconds. And anyone that's following you gets a push notification whenever you upload a new video, and it syndicates that video to every platform you're on. It's been a great tool for us in creating content and distributing it to fans.
Well, social media for us is basically our lifeblood for our site. I mean, we haven't spent $1 in marketing. I mean, it's all completely done via social networking. So, for example, T.I. and Grand Hustle is one of our clients. So, and T.I. has about maybe 17 million on Facebook. So if you go to T.I.'s Facebook page, the majority of posts on the site are people wanting T.I. or someone from Grand Hustle to listen to their music or watch my YouTube video or something along those lines. So we've figured out a way to directly monetize his social currency. So now all of those people are coming to BlazeTrack because they know that they're going to get a direct video response from someone within T.I.'s camp. And all of our clients basically leverage their own social currency and do the marketing for us because essentially we've gone into business with one another. So they don't mind tweeting out to their million followers or posting on Facebook because they know that that's going to equal dollars for them in regards to monetizing their own social currency. So, I mean, I don't know where we would be without it.
Okay.
If I could just elaborate on what everybody's talking about here too, is that
sure, Corey.
You're like, oh, here he goes again. Shut up, man. No, but,
hey, I cut the mic off.
Well, no. I just wanted to say because I imagine a lot of people are here to probably take this information and use it yourself to promote yourself or whatever business or project you have going on. It's important to mention that today there are a lot of things that you can use carte blanche, actually, and combine them to put yourself out there, because that's what we've done. I mean, we've had people call us and say, hey, can you use this because you seem to be using something else very well. There's a lot of things that we use on our site. Ustream, for example, we combine something like Ustream to embed on our website to do a live podcast, but we also use something else called Blog Talk Radio to take calls from people on this certain show that we do. And that's just, I mean, I could go on and on, but that's just something that just goes to show you how you can reach an audience by combining different things out there that allow you to do something where years ago you'd be paying thousands upon thousands of dollars to hire a consultant or a service person to come out and do that thing for you. You can do it yourself now.
You can do it in your living room.
Yeah, you can do it. Corey, I do it in the bed of my underwear, man. When I'm doing that call-in show, I don't get out of bed.
TMI. Corey, I was actually going to ask you the next question, and that was that you really leveraged YouTube a lot for your early days, correct?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So talk to us a little bit about that, because that's a product that everyone is using today, too, as well. And Ron, that's a way in which people can upload content to your website. Mozzie, again, getting in front of your clients, so...
Well, that's a very good question, because YouTube is one of the main examples of something that you can use to completely cut out the middleman and what you do. I mean, a lot of the things that people would do, I mean, think about even 10 years ago. I mean, we're here at South by Southwest. We're at a film festival, and a lot of people would depend, not to knock South by Southwest or any other film festival at all, but let's just say you made a short film. You would probably be at the mercy of submitting that short film to a panel at a film festival to get that scene. You wouldn't have any other way to really show up besides inviting your friends to your house and showing them. And, you know, what good is that? If five people seeing it? I mean, not today. You don't have to do that. There are so many people who are taking their films and their shorts and whatever else they have to show or say or express themselves with and putting it on something like YouTube and gaining an audience of millions around the world. And that's just one. YouTube is just one of the many ways to do that. I mean, that's what helped us out. When I mentioned doing Access Television, Access Television was fun, and we were being seen, and we became really well known in town. If ever I wanted to leave the house and I didn't have anybody to hang out with, I said, you know, I'm just going to go to a bar. I will meet somebody by the end of that night. But that's in town. No matter how cool that is, that's in town.
Right.
And once YouTube came about, and we started putting our stuff on YouTube, that's one of the main reasons why I said I don't need this anymore. I have an audience. Worldwide audience of millions of people who could see this potentially instead of just showing my stuff in a self-contained place like a city. So that really helped us out, get eyes on what we were doing to help get us recognized.
Okay. So my next question is, if you're not using it now, you need to be. And the panelists have talked a little bit about some of the technology tools that you can be using to kind of get yourself in front of your customers, clients, and potential critics. But I want to know, what is it, you know, if you could give a list of the top three technologies that you would say someone should be using right now, what are they?
I'll go ahead and start. I mean, obviously, BlazeTrack is number one. I mean, that goes without being said. And specifically for an artist, I mean, I think it's more about how you use the platforms that you utilize. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I see artists, you know, post on Twitter or Facebook, you know, listen to my song, and they'll post it 15 times in the span of 2 minutes. And all that's going to do is it's going to cause me to block you or ignore you. So, I mean, you know, there has to be some sort of internet etiquette in the way that you use your platforms. I think Facebook is huge in regards to building fan bases because, I mean, you're working with, you know, it's a soft sell because these people are your friends. These people, you know, they know you, they grew up with you, and they're friends of Facebook for a reason. So I think that's a huge platform specifically for an artist because, you know, you can kind of get their opinion and you're going to value their opinion more because you have some sort of relationship with them. Twitter, same thing. It's cool for you to, you know, tweet out your song, tweet out your video, but, you know, do it in a manner that's respectful to the people who follow you. And I think that's probably the biggest, you know, mistake that a lot of artists use, just how they utilize the platform that they currently use.
That's a good point. Corey? or Mozzie?
Well, so SocialCam, I already talked about them. I think it's an awesome platform. It's the biggest video app on the iPhone right now. If you're an artist, TracksBy, in the next time that you're launching a new song or video, you should put it on TracksBy to showcase it on your Facebook page and to pin it on Twitter. Beyond just reaching fans, though, you need to know like what's actually happening with your social media. There's this great service called CrowdBooster, which provides really rich analytics on how many people your tweets are reaching, who your top followers are, what the best time of day is to tweet based on your past activity. And I think everybody should be using that. I use it for Lil Wayne, I use it for Lil Twist and Drake, and it's been really beneficial in figuring out what content really plays well with their audiences.
Corey?
Well, of course, it would depend on what you're using these programs for. I mean, because if you're using it for, you know, if you use an application for business, it's going to differ from the way that you would use another application for entertainment or self-promotion. You know, for what we do, I hate to keep going on YouTube, but YouTube is a place where you can monetize now. Right now, you see people who are setting up businesses which allow you to... They maximize, they optimize your content for you. They even bring you in, maybe, and I'm interested to see where these business models go, because right now you have people setting up businesses where if we take what it looks like right now, there's no telling what it might evolve to in about a year, but it's possible that a year from now, your equivalent of the networks back when they started out in the 50s, 60s, I mean, they're going to be your new TV stations. They're going to be where people have their own network of entertainment to show you, and you're going to be getting a different alternative kind of entertainment. But the important thing to note about that is that YouTube allows you, whether you're joining up somebody who's forming this network or whether you're an individual, and I'm sure there's other places that you can do this with besides YouTube. I know there are. But you on YouTube with your videos, you can monetize that now. I mean, there are people who... Like that guy, Tay Zunday, Chocolate Ring, you know, that guy, he's right now, I mean, you think that he's, you're laughing and you're like, oh, what that fool, you know, what happened to that guy? That guy is actually making a living off of that one video. And the reason why he is because while you're wondering where he is, there's millions of other people who still check on this guy. He still produces stuff, and while he might not ever have another Chocolate Rain at this moment, you know, and please God, I hope he does, because I love that video. but he's been able to build a base of fans who come back and check on what he does. And once you have a channel where you have a million people who come by there, and the other important thing is to keep making content and make content that's original to you. You can use everything in the world, and if you're doing the same thing that everybody else is out there is doing, then you're not going to make it. You got a cat, film it, get about 20 million viewers on that. That's a cat. Everybody else is doing that, even if you had that many viewers. The people that are really making it right now, the unique people, the people that have something that they're doing that no one else is doing. But once you get that fan base going, off of one video, you don't have to be rich. You can just be able to pay your mortgage and buy groceries, and that's what most of these people who are doing this out there. Basically, it's all in your hands now, more than it ever has been before.
So, thank you. So we were just kind of talking a little bit about the business side of arts, you know, the creative space. And what I would like for us to do, as we are talking about these kind of social media platforms and other technology platforms, we also want to make sure that we're building up the business acumen of artists, because it's great if you can get that visibility, but it's not great if you can't manage yourself as a business, as a brand, in order to maintain that across the long run. So what business skills would you say are critical for a creative today to consider themselves as more of a business and a brand?
I think Mozzie was, he hit it right there where you do have to become somewhat more of a business-oriented person, because you have to keep up with your own analytics. You have to keep up with how many people you have coming through. You have to track that, because you have to recognize certain patterns that are happening. And some people, I'm not saying everybody has to do that, but most people, I think that's what drives them to know how well they're performing and keeps no matter how small or how big their business, if that's what you want to call it, how big or small their business is, it's going to help them notice those patterns to keep them going and keep them in tune with the audience that's watching their stuff.
Right. So the numbers, it's important to know the numbers, whether it be your books or the other side of that, which is the analytics that helps to inform you where you need to be, how you need to be there, and when you need to be there. So do you have anything else you'd like to add to that, Mazi or Ron?
I was showing the manager of a really large artist the top 10 cities that his Facebook fans were in, and he was so surprised because they had never toured in like 75% of this list.
Wow.
Your fans are absolutely in all these places. I can show you. I can guarantee it. This is where they are. This is what they're listening to. This is what they're doing. And you've never been to these cities. Like, you just need to look. Facebook gives you amazing insights. CrowdBooster will give you great insights on Twitter. If you use like SoundCloud to host your music, they'll show you exactly where people are listening to your stuff. YouTube will show you where people are listening and how much they care. Like, you just need to look.
Ron?
Yeah, I agree with both these guys, but I also think it's important to surround yourself with people who are smarter than you. And I think, you know, especially as an artist and, you know, as a creative person, you know, sometimes it's best for you to just stay in that lane and to have people around you who can handle the analytics, who can handle the management, who can handle the accounting and the business side. You know, everyone's not Jay-Z. You know, you're not going to be this, you know, huge music mogul, and, you know, you're juggling all these things, and you're an artist, and you're a owner of an NBA team, you have a clothing line, you have all these different things going on. Everyone doesn't have the ability to juggle all of those things at the same time. So if you surround yourself with other people that can help you build that brand and kind of just keep you focused in the thing that you're good at, if you're a rapper or an artist or a musician or what have you, I think that is a very integral part in just building that brand and going in the right direction.
Perfect. Excellent. Excellent. Thank you guys so much. So I'm going to open the floor up to questions from the audience or the floor. If you have anything, let me know. Just raise your hands and I'll stop by. Go ahead.
Quick question. We talked about business and creativity. I wanted to open the topic to philanthropy. So as you think about your business model and improving your profile as a brand, how have you integrated that?
Girl, we ain't got no money. We can't get money. No, no, I'm joking. Please go ahead.
I forgot the question.
Philanthropy and your business. How are you giving back? And it can be in non-monetary ways. So if you spend your time, that is just as important. Would you like to try that again, Corey? Okay.
Yes.
So basically, like, leveraging your influence for campaigns that are of good causes and things of that nature. Have you done that yet?
Well, I'll give an example. Rodney Jerkins is one of our clients, and he ran a search looking for a producer and a songwriter. And, you know, that search generated, you know, some healthy revenues. And he donated half of that to a charity that he works with. So a lot of our clients are already wealthy, so they don't really need the money that they're receiving for using our platform. So a lot of them actually use it to give back to whatever causes that they're interested in. So, you know, us personally, we really haven't made a lot of money yet. So, but, you know, we do plan on doing something, you know, in the future.
Anyone else? We have a question, another question.
I will say this. I am not the selfish bastard that I came across. I'll say this. As far as whatever kind of charities our parent company is involved in, I'm not aware of that. I'll tell you right now, I don't see them giving any money away. But, you know, I'm not going to say that they don't, but in my own way, I still get called out. And, you know, our site isn't really kid-friendly, but we have some teachers who are on the site, and they look at it, and they say, hey, we have a lot of kids who love animation, they love drawing, and can you come out to this class and speak to them? And I'm really good with kids, believe it or not, and I can sit down with them, and they do, and I get into it, and they really love to sit down and draw with me, It might not be monetary, but it is time that I put into like going out and doing community work in that way. So,
cool. Okay, Mazi, if you can take that.
Yeah, I have something.
If you want to.
Yeah, when I was at Ustream doing VIP support, I really made it a point to offer free support to any like nonprofits or charities or people who were trying to raise money for a good cause, even if that meant that, you know, I was working off the clock just to help them out and get them set up, just because I know that Ustream is an amazing platform. Live video is an amazing medium for getting the word out and raising money for a cause, so I wanted to make sure that they had all our services and support, even if they couldn't afford it.
Okay. If you'd like to get to the Corey Coleman Fund, we're accepting gifts right now.
We have another question here, so go ahead.
This question is, I guess, for the most part for Mozzie. My name is Jay Bowe. I'm with LeBron Digital. And I wanted to ask, for us, we do a lot of upselling. It's more kind of about monetization. We do a lot of upselling to our brand partners, dealing with our social media and our digital efforts. What are some of the things that you've done as far as, are you guys... What sort of things are you guys doing in order to monetize your social media as far as, you know, Young Money and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, actually. We just did a campaign with Pitbull where he launched a new song on a brand's Facebook page using our platform, and that brand paid for every like we drove to their fan page. So we put out this song on their page, made it so that you had to like them in order to listen, and Pitbull put out a status update driving traffic there, and I think we drove like 30,000 new fans in a day, and they paid pretty well for that.
Yeah. I have a question about the voice you put out to your customers and in general to the world. Like, obviously newer companies have a lot more personality in it than the old sanitized like corporate world, but like, how far do you go like without alienating people? Like, how do you draw that line? How do you determine the voice that you put out there?
I guess not if we're asking again.
I don't think we could hear him so well.
Yeah,
could
I couldn't hear him.
Oh yeah. So I'm wondering, like, how much personality do you put into the voice of your company, of your brand, or whatever, to your customers and to the general population?
Well, on our site, it pretty much is completely personality driven. I mean, it's pretty much caricatures of who we are. We have our hands on almost every piece of content that we do. It's driven by our voice, and we don't really have anyone censoring that at all, anyone editing that at all. I'm waiting for a lawsuit to come through at some point.
Stop.
Yeah, I mean, for us, I mean, we're in constant communication with our customers in regards to the things they want to see on our site, the different clients they want to see on our site. And I think the thing that they really appreciate is that all of our clients, you know, are 100% real with the responses that they give to the customers. I mean, even if it's "you're terrible," you know, they'll tell them that they're terrible, but at least they'll give some sort of constructive criticism. Oh, man, you should see some of these responses.
That's a lot better than getting nothing back.
Oh, man. And you know, when we see these responses come through, sometimes, you know, we're a little fearful of how the customer is going to respond. But then, you know, all they do is they'll go back into, you know, back to their studio and, you know, take the advice, recreate it, and come back and submit it to the same person. I mean, we've seen times when people have submit the same song to the same person 5 or 6 times, each time going back, taking the advice, and tweaking their song a little bit. And, you know, they're improving. So, I mean, they really appreciate the fact that they're getting this video response back, and it's real. You know, there's nothing fake about the responses, and they really appreciate that.
Yeah, I have a question for Corey. I know you do a lot of podcasts, obviously, on Spill.com and everything else. And kind of as a podcaster, I always wonder what the best way to promote. So beyond Twitter, beyond Facebook, beyond your website, what has been the most valuable thing in terms of promotion for your podcast, either getting new listeners or just in general getting more people to see the content?
You know what? Right now, I don't even think we're fully utilizing everything we can for our podcast. And that is something that's out of our control. That is something that we should be using iTunes for, you know, our RSS feeds. I mean, because, you know, to go back to what he said, the whole thing about the site is that you have businesses where you brand a product, our company, we branded ourselves. And outside of our website, I don't think that we're using YouTube enough for it. Like right now, what we should be doing is we do 1-hour, 2-hour, some days 4-hour long podcast. We should be taking segments of those, 30 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever, and putting them up on YouTube and then having a tag at the end that says, if you'd like to hear more, go here. We're just starting to do that. But it's those kind of things I think would leverage those pieces of content a lot more if we were putting it out there. But then it goes back. I think it's a big fault that I'm having to manage everything myself because, like my man said here, I need smarter people than me to do that, you know? I mean, I just have my hands full, and we're not doing that at the moment. But in a perfect world, that is what we would do.
This is for anybody up there. Can you kind of give me some insights into your pricing models? Like, how much is this worth in the marketplace? And do you have a lot of going back and forth with clients about how much your services cost?
Understand that? So basically, how do you create a valuation of what it is that you're offering, both to your clients and to the people who are actually consuming it? So in your case?
Right. Well, in our case, our clients set the fee that they decide to charge per submission. So I guess it kind of just goes in regards to where they are in the career, the success they had, the accolades that they received. And we'll know right away whether or not, you know, their price is right. I mean, if it's not right, they're not going to get any submissions, period. And, you know, we'll adjust the price to something that makes more sense. If the price is too low and they're getting overran with submissions and they can't keep up, then, you know, we'll adjust it as well. So we let the customers actually dictate the market in regards to the price and just follow it based on the amount of submissions they get on a monthly basis. So it's driven by the customers for us.
TraxBuy is a free platform because I don't think that there's a whole lot of money to make charging artists to use this. We're really focused on working with brands to monetize, and as far as that goes, brands have a whole lot of money, and we can charge them based on the actual performance of what we're doing for them.
Cool. And one last question we have here before
I don't know if you're doing this already, or this is for Ron, but, yes. Or if you have plans to, but do you take any of the content that's generated by these people who are submitting? I mean, is that a private process that they get the video back, or is
No, I mean, we have success stories, and we have videos from professionals as well as videos from our customers as well, so those are really relevant.
But the idea of creating actual programming around that, like as if it were sort of a... American
like
Idol,
like a channel or something. I mean, that's something that we've definitely internally discussed. So, I mean, we probably want to get a little bit more content first before we can put something together like that. But, I mean, you know, content is king. So, you know, the more content you can get and put together in some type of format like that is definitely going to be huge. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we're actually going to close out, but I have one more question for you all. Now, I told you guys I'm the president of the chamber here, so I have to do a plug for Austin, since we're all in Austin. And I just want to ask each of you, what is your favorite thing about this city?
Well, this is my first time here, so I've only been here, you know, since yesterday. And I came in the middle of a monsoon, so, you know, I haven't really had the opportunity to explore and see what's around. But, you know, I'm going to be here all next week. So hopefully I get the chance to see what else the city has to offer. And, you know, I look forward to that.
All right. Corey? Mazi?
I've been to Austin. It's like my fourth time. And every time it's been for South by Southwest. But I think the things that I've always loved most is, first of all, the people that live in Austin are awesome. Like, everybody's been really nice and helpful every time I'm here. And the food is amazing all over the place. Like, every time I come here, all I want to do is eat all day.
All right. Corey, you live here, so you better drive it home.
Yeah, you know, I've been here for 20 years, and I tell you, it's just not like it used to be when I first moved here.
We have to cut his mic off.
No, you know something? Met a guy right there from London, and I was telling him the thing about that's great about Austin is that it's a very multicultural town. Now, when you say multicultural, a lot of people immediately think it's broken down on a race basis, but you don't understand. There's a multiculturalism of so many things here, so many talents, and so many ways to... I mean, this is one supportive city, but you're here at South by Southwest, and you're not going to meet people who are not going to encourage you. Everybody here is going to encourage you to do something. whatever it is that you're interested in. You're going to leave here, whether you stay here, you leave here, you're going to leave with a sense of empowerment, or if you stay here, you're going to be supported by that community. So, it's a great place because of that. And yeah, the food is damn good.
Man,
you did good.
Las Cazuelas, Mexican food restaurant. Not Tex-Mex, Mexican food. Speak Spanish when you go in there. Bring somebody with you.
and Twitter handles for each one of you. Twitter handle for you, Ron?
My company is at BlazeTrak. That's BLAZETRAK. And my personal is at Ron_A_Harrison.
Corey?
K Coolman. KCOOLMAN.
Okay. Mozzie?
Mozzie. MAZY is my personal Twitter. And my company's Twitter is at TraxBy. TRACKSBY.
And mine is at NCofield, COFIELD. Thank you all for coming. I hope you enjoyed the panel. Did you? All right, perfect. Have a good, fun, safe South by Southwest.